EPA's STORET program encourages and supports sound data management, a vital aspect of effective watershed planning and protection, no matter how large or small the organization. The National STORET Data Warehouse is EPA's internet-available repository of water quality data. It contains water quality data of all types, physical, chemical, and biological, collected by federal agencies, states, tribes, watershed organizations, and universities. This webcast will provide a brief overview of the STORET program and discuss the importance of data management to watershed protection. Speakers will offer a quick primer on how to access data from the STORET warehouse and use that data to characterize a watershed. Future developments in STORET, in particular those relevant to watershed organizations, will also be discussed, as well as how individual organizations can be involved. Now, let's meet our speakers. Randy Hill will be our first speaker. Before joining EPA as STORET's project manager, Randy has had 20 years of project management experience from both the government and commercial sectors, where he led the implementation and training of Oracle eBusiness Suite software. As a STORET project manager, he has management responsibilities for the day-to-day operations, maintenance, and development of new software functionality. Dwayne Young will be our second speaker. Dwayne has been involved with STORET since 2001, with the last 1.5 years as part of EPA's monitoring branch in the Office of Water. He has led the development of the Water Quality Exchange Program, or WQX, and has worked with numerous states and tribes in assisting them to implement good data management practices and STORET as part of their day-to-day activities. Finally, we have Kristen Gunthert. Kristen is an IT specialist at EPA headquarters in Washington, D.C., where she has been involved with the STORET program since 2005. She supports the STORET program in the area of communications and outreach and has worked with various states and tribes in outreach for the Water Quality Exchange. So, now that I've introduced our speakers, let's get started. Randy, take it away.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining this webcast. If you would, please turn to slide number 2. Why are we here? What is this webcast about? What is the STORET program and the National STORET Data Warehouse? I will be providing some further information on that. Our second bullet is why is data management important for the watershed protection? Dwayne Young will be providing information around this bullet point. The last two bullet points, how to get data out of STORET data warehouse, and how can I use STORET data to help characterize my watershed, will be discussed by Kristen further on. Today, I have a mystery. I have something that I need to find at the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed. And in order to do that, we are going to use the tools that are available to us and discuss data management and further options of finding out and discovering our mystery. Part of our mystery will be around this watershed, the Cherry Creek watershed, and Station 156. Remember that as we move through our slides, as this will be the result of our webcast. Please move to slide number 2. I'm sorry, slide number 3. The STORET program. To help us solve this mystery, we need to understand the STORET program. It stands for Storage and Retrieval of Water Quality Monitoring Data. We're going to help solve this program by understanding the STORET program and how it promotes sound data management practices, stores and maintains water quality data that is submitted to the EPA through agencies, groups around the nation. But there are a couple of things that we need to understand about the STORET program. The first is the STORET began back in 1962. It was a mainframe. There were two main ideas around Storet. The first is that it was going to be a warehouse. And secondly, it was going to support sound data management. Please turn to slide 4. With this mystery, I'm going to be looking at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment to help me find some of this information that I need. In doing so, the National Storet Data Warehouse is going to help us with this answer. We're going to be looking at the modernized Storet. This is a national repository of water quality monitoring data. Again, it stores water data of all types, biological, chemical, physical, submitted by states and tribes and watershed groups. Now, we're going to use this data to help us with this mystery. The Storet Data Warehouse is a web-enabled tool, and it can be used and will be used throughout this demonstration to help us with the Middle Creek Platte the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed. There's a problem there with dissolved oxygen, and we're going to discover that as we move through this demonstration. Also, Storet encourages data sharing at a national level. We are looking to obtain data from states and tribes and volunteers and other federal agencies and universities around the country. Please move to slide 5. What you see on this slide is a representation of the stations where data has been collected. The warehouse is refreshed monthly, and we're going to use information that has been collected against Colorado to help us with our mystery, to try to understand what is going on with our dissolved oxygen problem with this watershed. Also on this map, you'll see that there is missing information, and we are working with states to help them provide us with the information around their particular states. We are looking to continue to increase our participation in Storet. Please move to slide 6. Now back on slide 4, we talked about, or we saw buttons that we could use to get into Storet. The one that we will be using today, or looking at today, is the modernized Storet data. This will give us access to the modernized Storet. But also available to us is the legacy Storet data. Now this legacy Storet data, it contains data of undocumented quality. It doesn't mean that the data is bad data, but it does mean that the data is undocumented and this data is not being scrutinized, or we're not changing any of this data. It's stagnant data. So most of our work, or all of our work, will be around the modernized Storet. Also, there are other systems that are available from other agencies like the USGS. The USGS also has a water monitoring database that gives us access to the web. Please turn to slide 7. This database is called the NWIS database. Now, in our mystery that we're trying to solve, we can use the NWIS database to help us discover the flow data that could be used with watershed data to get an understanding of what's happening with our Cherry Creek watershed. It is another great source of data because it provides us stream flow. Here on the slide, you see that the USGS manages about 1.5 million sites around the country where water quality monitoring data are collected. But the important thing here to realize is that daily stream flow conditions, as well as chemical and physical water quality data, are also available. And you can see the website here listed on slide 7. Please turn to slide 8. So, we have our mystery, but in order to solve this mystery, we need to take a look at our raw monitoring results, along with information about where the samples were collected, when it was collected, what was collected, how it was collected, why it was collected, and who collected it. Now, what's important about this is the collection set. And we're looking for a collection set around Cherry Creek Watershed. This collection set could be because of an event. Maybe we had a rain event that has produced a problem with dissolved oxygen around this watershed. So we will be looking at things such as the lat, the long. Was it seasonal? We possibly might be looking at pH or temperature. And maybe what kind of net was used. These are things surrounding our water quality monitoring data that we might be interested in. We're like a news reporter. We're like someone that's trying to discover and understand this mystery around this watershed. Please move to slide 9. But in order to understand and to help solve this mystery, there are a set of terms that we need to understand, such as projects, stations, and results. So what is a project to us? Our project today is the Cherry Creek Watershed. On that watershed, there are stations. There are actually 66 stations that we are going to be taking a look at some point. Now, we will not look at each individual station. We will be looking at station 156. And we will look at some of the results around station 156. And these are measurements of what was monitored. Our interest today is around dissolved oxygen. Please turn to slide 10. Around slide 10, what you see here is the Storet warehouse overview. This describes the what, the who, and the why. It is at a very high level. This is not exactly what we use to design the database, but it is what we use to give an overview of how the database has been designed. What we're looking for here is our results. In other words, who owns the data? Please turn to slide 11. In helping us solve this mystery, we now understand that the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has put information into Storet. So this is our state environmental agency. Now, there are others that could be placing data into Storet, such as tribal environmental agency and groups, volunteers, and universities. There are 42 states today that has data in Storet. Please turn to slide 12. This slide represents among 40 groups using Storet. Here you see listed from Massachusetts, we have the Mystic River Watershed Association, the Big Thompson from Colorado, the Montana Volunteer Water Quality Monitoring Group, from Virginia and Maryland, the Potomac Appalachian Trail Club, the Sierra Club from Missouri, and Low Water from Iowa. We are also, to solve this mystery, looking at the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek Watershed. So we will be using data from Colorado to help us with this mystery. Please turn to slide 13. Sharing data at a national level. Why is this important? Organizations from around the country put data into Storet. We are interested today in what is happening around the Cherry Creek Watershed. What has Colorado and the volunteers done to put data into the system? In the past and currently today, we use the distributed Storet database that is collected, sent to the EPA, and is loaded into our data warehouse. We also have web tools for data submission to the Storet warehouse, and Kristen will be talking further about that as we move through this. This is all to help us with our mystery. Why do we have so much dissolved oxygen at this watershed? Please move to slide 14. Why is it important for us to understand that data needs to be managed locally? Well, as the data is managed locally, it is then loaded into our storerette data warehouse. If it is not well documented at a local level, if it is not managed correctly at the local level, then as it makes its way to our data warehouse, bad data in, bad data out. So we are looking for data that is well documented and data that is managed properly. Now, as we move forward, Dwayne Young is going to talk about why is data management important for your watershed. Here is Dwayne.
Thanks, Randy. Thanks for that great overview of Storette. What I'm going to be talking about now and just spending the next few minutes talking about is data management, why it's important, why it's an important part of not only managing your watershed, but also really understanding what's going on in the environment. And a big part of it is there's a lot of data that's being collected out there, but there's a huge amount of resource that needs to be monitored. And the more that we can share data with one another, the better that we can understand our environment. So what I'd like to first ask you to do is to turn to slide 15. So what is data management? Data management is the process of converting the data that you're collecting out in the field and the data that you're retrieving back from the labs and turning it into a format that can be maintained over time. Typically, it's an electronic format, but the important part about data management is that it is also very well documented so that it can be reused at a later time. When we are collecting data or when anyone is collecting data, there's a fair amount of investment that goes into the collection of data. And the more that data can be reused, then that's the better that investment is. Please go to slide 16. So what are some of the components of a well-managed data set? Data needs to be documented in such a way, as Randy described, he mentioned the basic components of journalism, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. And when we think about how data are documented and how data are well-managed, we need to be able to describe those core components of the data that are collected. Parts of that are typically referred to as metadata. And you see on the slides we talk about metadata and how it helps us really be able to compare data between samples. It also allows us to really document the quality of the data as well, what methods were used to collect the data, what methods were used to analyze the data. If all of these things are documented and well documented, what this allows us to do is it not only allows us to be able to use our own data in the future, it also allows others to be able to use the data that we collect so that they can make it part of their decisions. Please move to slide 17. So who manages the data? Here we have a pretty good list of people that manage data, whether that's folks that are out in the field collecting the data, it's the lab people doing analyses, whether it's the actual individuals that are entering the data into a data system, whether it's somebody who's using the data to do data analysis, or whether the IT staff that are used to keep the whole system up and running. But the real answer to the question, who manages data, is that everyone manages data. It's really all of these people's responsibility for managing data. And it starts at the very beginning from the collecting of the samples all the way to getting the actual results into the computer. Slide 18. So going back to what Randy mentioned about this mystery that we're trying to solve, what we're really trying to describe is trying to understand what the story of our watershed is. And the most important thing that you need to consider when trying to decide what's the story of your watershed is what questions do you want to ask. Randy particularly focused on dissolved oxygen, and that may be one of the questions that we want to look at in this particular example. For example, in this particular watershed, the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed, which is located around Denver, Colorado, has had a fair amount of pressure put on it as a result of development. And so in this particular watershed, we may want to take a look at some of the particular things that are going on in this watershed. And so once we've tried to determine what our why is, then we can start trying to see what types of data are available. And then all of these pieces really help us pull this story together. And data management is really a key part to this entire process. Slide 19. From the Draft Watershed Planning Handbook, many of you may have seen this graphic before, but this really is just shows you how you go through the process of developing a watershed plan. And the part of this process that we're going to particularly focus on is the part labeled characterizing your watershed. And data management plays a critical piece in all of these components, but in particular, we're going to look at how to characterize a watershed. Moving to slide 20. So also from the Draft Watershed Planning Handbook, there are five broad categories of data used to fully characterize a watershed. The first of these, the physical, natural features. What does the land makeup look like? The land use. How is the land being used in that watershed? What's the population characteristics of that watershed? What are the water body conditions? Are there assessments that have already been done? Are there waters that are listed in that watershed? And if there are waters that are listed or impaired, what are the sources of the pollution in that watershed? And then finally, the piece that is of relevance to this webcast, what's the water quality monitoring data? What data is available in Storet or NLIS, the other system that Randy mentioned? Moving on to slide 21. There are many types of monitoring results that can really help you characterize your watershed, whether that's regular results, could be metals results, nutrients, microbiological, physical, for example, dissolved oxygen, pH, temperature. All of these are characteristics of the water. Other types of indicators, for example, biological monitoring results, what types of fish have been caught in those waters, what are the benthic macroinvertebrates that have been sampled in those waters, and finally, habitat assessments. What's the overall habitat for that stream that you're looking at or that watershed that you're looking at? What is it, good habitat? Is it bad habitat? What's going on in that area? And what I'd like to do now is actually just pause for a moment and let you guys ask some questions about anything we've talked to up to this point.
Thank you, Randy and Dwayne. We will pause briefly here to take some questions. Excuse me. Let's begin with those submitted online. Just as a reminder, you can submit questions online at any time by clicking on the question mark button at the top of the slides page. Our first question comes from Josh, from Stony Brook, New York, who asks, what are some other WQ data sites? Are there others besides Storet and NWIS with national and regional data?
Thanks. That's actually a great question, Josh. Really, that's one of the surprising answers to that question is there's really not many. The reality is that Storet and NWIS are really the only, that I'm aware of, national systems that have data that across state boundaries. There are a few states out there that do serve up their data to the data that they have collected or that they have monitored. There's really not many that take data across state boundaries. And as a matter of fact, Storet is the only system that I'm aware of that has data from multiple jurisdictions as opposed to just being one organization. For example, NWIS only has USGS data, whereas Storet has data from over 200 different organizations.
Okay, our second question comes from William in Roswell, Georgia, who asks, it sounds as though there is site parameter data available from NWIS separate from Storet. Is there any intention in the future to merge these data values into one queryable structure?
That's another great question. This is something that the Storet team and the NWIS team has been working on for several years. And luckily, as a result of this more recent WQX feature that we've developed over the past year, this is something that we'll actually be able to make a reality sometime in the near future. What we are currently doing is we're working with the U.S. Geological Survey to develop common, what we call web services, which really are just ways that we can share data. But the big idea is exactly what your question is getting at. What that would allow us to do is to be able to publish data out of Storet and data out of NWIS in a common format that is easily understandable, and a person doesn't need to do conversions between the two systems. So it's something that we're very excited about, and we're really looking forward to trying to make that work out. In the meantime, and you'll see this later on in the webcast, we currently do show both sets of data on one website. We'll show you a tool called Window to My Environment later in the webcast that does allow you to see both Storet and NWIS stations in one map.
Okay, we've got another question here from Anne in D.C., and she'd like to know, can you explain the difference between legacy and modern storage?
Okay, that's another great question that we actually get quite often. A lot of times we throw around the term storage, and storage is a really broad concept that describes a lot of different things. But in particularly, the legacy system is the system that was originally developed, as Randy said, back in 1962. And that system really did a great job for the time that it was out there. It was ahead of its time incredibly at that time. It was really the only water quality monitoring system in the country at that time. And it survived also a tremendously long period of time. It carried on through the late 90s when it really came to the point where the year 2000 was going to make it so that it wasn't going to work anymore. So at that time, what the Storet team did was that they decided that it was time to remodernize and to change Storet and to really bring it into the current ages. And so what they did is they took another look at the whole Storet process and redeveloped it into a newer, more functional system that would continue to work over time. So the real heart of the question is, what's the difference between the two? We do treat them as separate systems. The legacy system, like Randy said, contains data of what we consider undocumented quality. And like Randy said, that doesn't mean that it's bad quality. It just means that we can't document what the data quality is. The modernized system does require a whole suite of metadata to go around every piece of data that goes into the system. So that system does have data of documented quality, so that you can actually see, is it good data, is it bad data, who collected it, how did they collect it, why did they collect it, and how did they analyze the data. That's really is the big difference between the legacy and the modernized system, is that they really have different documentation levels.
At this time, if anyone would like to ask a question over the phone, please unmute yourself and give us your name and organization before your question. Any questions? Okay, if there are no further questions, then we'll move on with our presentation. So, Duane, back to you.
Okay, now I'd like to invite everyone to move off of the slide that has my lovely picture on it and move to slide 23. Now what we're going to talk about, we're going to get off of data management a little bit. And we're going to get into ways to get data out of the Storet warehouse. In particular, I'm going to talk about some EPA mapping tools that we have. And if you guys have participated in Watershed webcasts before, you probably have seen many of these. And we're not going to go into too much detail into their particularly workings, but we really just want to tie into how these tools fit into the overall process of characterizing your watershed. The other part that we will talk about on getting data out of the Storet warehouse is our Storet website. And Kristen will be talking about that. She will show you how to directly download data out of the warehouse, as well as use one of our new exciting tools, which we call our Watershed Summary Tool, which is a new feature that we recently developed that allows you to be able to get summary information for a watershed and then drill down to get the particular information that you're interested in, something that we've been very excited about, and we're going to show you that shortly. Move on to slide 24. So first of all, we're going to come back to this watershed that we were talking about, and we're going to use a couple mapping tools. And typically the way that this would fit into your process is you may have a question that you're starting with, and the maps are a great place to start. They're a great place to try to find out what's available, what other types of information are out there, what does the landscape look like, really just to get a better picture of even deciding where you're going to look. And so we're going to take this and say that we're starting at the very high level. The two tools that we have are, number one, the Window to My Environment product, and the second is the EnviroMapper product. And these two tools are similar in many ways, but they're also meant for really a different type of audience. And I'll mention that briefly, the different audiences that they're for as we go through them. But what we will do with Window to My Environment is that we will zoom into a town, and with EnviroMapper, we'll actually zoom into an 8-digit hydrologic unit. And I'll explain what a hydrologic unit is here shortly. Move on to slide 25. So starting with Window to My Environment, the Window to My Environment tool is really meant as a public mapping tool that EPA has developed. The idea and the way that it works is that you enter in your zip code or a town, and it will create a mapping window for you to show you what types of information are available within that window that you've selected. The neat thing about Window to My Environment is that what it does show you is it shows you all of the different monitoring locations that are contained in the window that you've selected. So if you take a look at this slide, what you will see is you will see some blue triangles and you will see some green triangles. The green triangles are actually Storet stations. The blue triangles are USGS NWIS stations. So from the question that we had earlier about is there a way for the data to be brought together, this is what we're currently doing right now. This brings the data together into one mapping interface, and what the user can do is you can click on any one of those sites and you can retrieve monitoring data for that site. The other thing that I want to point out on this slide is under the watersheds on the right hand of your screen, Window to My Environment actually gives us the list of watersheds that we're seeing in this area. In particular, the one that we're going to be looking at is that Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed. So if you're trying to even just find your watershed, this is a great way to start. Move on to slide 26. This is EnviroMapper for Water. EnviroMapper for Water is really meant for a little bit different audience from Window to My Environment. EnviroMapper for Water is meant for the more water quality professional. There's a number of different types of layers and extra information that you can get out of EnviroMapper for Water that you cannot get out of Window to My Environment, including impaired waters, water quality standards, assessed waters, and permitted facilities. There's a number of great information that you can get through EnviroMapper for Water. The other piece of information relevant to us in this case is that we can also pull out the Storet stations. And in this case, what's a little bit different here is that not only can we get the modernized Storet data from here, we can also get the legacy data from here as well. What you're seeing on your screen is the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed. And what we're referring to here, this is what we call a HUC, or a hydrologic unit code. And all that is, it's a USGS defined boundary layer that defines a watershed and how water flows through the environment. We use that to break up the landscape and to break up the waters all across the country. Move on to slide 27. Slide 27 shows a great deal of monitoring locations on this stream that we're zoomed into. Every single one of those green dots is an actual monitoring location out of Storet. So as we can see on this slide, there's actually quite a number of monitoring locations that we can zoom into and pull data from. The other thing to point out in this slide is that every single one of those stations is hot linked. And if you can click on those hot links, and it will zoom you in and get you that data, the particular data for that watershed. Let's move on to slide 28. So now that we've identified what watershed that we're looking at, we've been able to take a look at that watershed and see what monitoring data is available, where the monitoring locations are, where the watershed is that we're interested in. We could have also looked at what the potential sources of pollution are. We could have looked at where the impaired waters are, what assessments have been done, what the water quality standards are. Now that we've looked at all that, now what we're going to do is we're going to jump into Storet, and we're going to try to take a look at this watershed that we've looked at and see what data are available. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Kristen.
Thanks, Dwayne. So now that we're on slide 28, this is just introducing us into the fact that we're going to go into the Storet Watershed Summary Tool to see what kind of data is available for this watershed that we're interested in, the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed. So I'm going to ask that everyone goes to slide 29. And on slide 29, you can see this is the Storet homepage. This is where you will begin for any kind of data query that you want to do against the Storet data warehouse. This is where you start. So the URL at the top of the page, www.epa.gov/Storet, is one to remember. So from this page, not only can you access the Storet data warehouse directly, but this is also where you can go and link to the watershed summary tool that Dwayne mentioned. Before I go ahead and get to the watershed summary tool, I'd like to point out a few other items on this page of interest. For example, the blue left-hand sidebar includes some links to more information about just the STORIT program in general, as well as we do have resources available if you'd like to get more involved with the program. If you clicked on the link called Data Owners Corner, for example, you could find information about joining our listserv. This is a distributed email list where you'll receive emails from the STORIT program about what's going on with what we're doing. For now, we're going to go ahead into the Watershed Summary Tool. And to do that, I'm going to go ahead and click on the download data link. Let's move to slide 30. So here, you can see those two yellow buttons that Randy had on a slide previously. If you were to click on the Browse or Download Legacy STORIT Data button, you would actually enter into the STORIT Legacy Data Center, as we've talked about. We're going to focus here on the modernized STORIT data. Now, when we talk about the National STORIT Data Warehouse, we're referring to the data warehouse that contains all of this modernized STORIT data. When I click on this button, I'll actually get into the warehouse entry page, and from there we're going to go to the Watershed Summary Tool. So let's go ahead and move to slide 31. Slide 31 shows the STORIT Data Warehouse entry page. As you can see here at the top there, it says data refreshed as of May 1st, 2007. We refresh this data warehouse monthly. Should say June there, but I think maybe we just haven't changed the web page yet. Basically, from this warehouse page, you can either directly access data by pulling either regular results data, biological results data, or habitat data. Right now, we're going to go to the Watershed Summary Tool by clicking on that left side link that's circled in red, Summary of Results by Watershed. Before I go ahead and click that and move into our Watershed Summary Tool, I do want to point out one other link on this page. It's the link that's circled in red more to the right, How to Query and Download Data. This actually allows you to pull down a PDF document with step-by-step instructions on how to both query, download, and then end up analyzing data from the STORIT warehouse. This is a great resource if you'd like to check out after this webcast with step-by-step instructions that walk you through. For now, we're going to go ahead and go to the Watershed Summary Tool to look at the different kinds of data that are available from the warehouse for the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek Watershed. So let's move to slide 32. Here we have the entrance page into our Watershed Summary Tool. You can see we've got circled in red, Go to Watershed Summary. Before we do that, I'd also like to point out that perhaps you don't know what your watershed is called, or you're not sure that the town you live in, what exact watershed that is named. If you're in that situation, you can go to EPA Search Your Watershed, another link available from this warehouse watershed summary page, and that allows you to actually enter in your place or your zip code or your town name and find out what exactly the name of your watershed is. I believe that type of tool has been pointed out in previous webcasts through the Watershed Academy, but it's also available as a link here. So we're going to go ahead and click on the Go to Watershed link, and we'll move on to slide 33. Here on slide 33, we're entered into the Watershed Summary Tool. You can see there's a drop-down box underneath the drainage basin or HUC selection. As Duane provided before, that definition of HUC is that hydrologic unit code. So when you pull down that drop-down, you're able to see all the different watersheds across the country that STORIT has data for. You can also see that you can search by either the different organizations across the country that have collected data on a certain watershed, or you can search by the different characteristic types that might be available. So, for example, you might say, I want to see how much physical data or how much biological data is in my HUC. So then, in that case, you would search by characteristic type. So for now, we're going to go ahead and move to slide 34. Slide 34, you can see that we've selected the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek Watershed, the watershed that Randy referred to, as well as Duane. You can see there that there's the hydrologic unit code number. that 8-digit unit code number that specifies which watershed we want to look at. We also want to choose to look by characteristic type. This will let us know how much biological, habitat, nutrient, or physical data, for example, are contained within the StorEd data warehouse. After I click query, we'll be able to see what all is inside the warehouse. Let's move on to slide 35. As you can see on slide 35, there's all kinds of different characteristic types that have been collected on this watershed. Everything from biological data to microbiological data down to physical data. You can see the different numbers of records that we have available in the warehouse. For example, there's 206 different result records that have been collected under the biological characteristic type. Randy's been mentioning that we are more interested in looking at maybe some physical data on this watershed, maybe something like dissolved oxygen on this watershed. So we're going to be interested in looking at the different types of physical data that have been collected. So physical has been circled in red there, and if we were to click on that physical hyperlink right there, we would see what is on slide 36. So let's move on to slide 36. And you can see here that within that hydrologic unit code, that 8-digit number there, we've got a bunch of different physical results. We've got a little less than 60,000 records, and those are all different things. Like there's a Secchi disk results type where, you know, you can go in and see the different Secchi disk dip-in results that people have collected. You can see that there's biochemical oxygen demand, all sorts of things. It seems, though, that dissolved oxygen does have quite a few results associated with it, right there with that almost 8,000 results there. So what we're going to do now, we know that dissolved oxygen has a bunch of results on this watershed, so we're going to go back, we're going to go directly into the warehouse in order to pull that data down directly. So I'll invite you to switch over to slide 37. And here we're just kind of pausing for a moment. Looks like there are a lot of dissolved oxygen readings, and we're going to go right to the warehouse to pull those out. So I'm going to move on to slide 38. And here on slide 38, I'm back at the StorEd Data Warehouse entry page. Now before, we had clicked to get into the warehouse watershed summary tool up there at the top, but now we're actually going to focus more on just directly querying out of the database. To do that, we're going to go down and we're going to select regular results by geographic location. Now, there are a variety of ways that you can pull data out of the StorEd warehouse. You could select results by a given station that you know about or by a given project. This is just one example of a way you can pull data out. So I'm going to go ahead and select regular results by geographic location, and I'm going to switch to slide 39. Slide 39, you can see you've entered into the query page on the StorEd warehouse. Getting data from the StorEd warehouse entails querying the data, making sure you're accessing the exact data that you want. Later on, we're going to be downloading that data. In other words, we're going to be saving that data to our computers. And then finally, we're going to take that downloaded data and we're going to analyze it using a simple software, Excel, that I'm sure most folks have interacted with but may not have seen in terms of analyzing StorEd data. So for now, we're going to be querying this data, looking again at this watershed that we're interested in, the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed. So if I was to click the lookup button on this page, it would give me again the list of different HUCs that are available. I'm going to switch to slide 40. You can see here that I've went ahead and selected that 8-digit HUC, which is in fact the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed. So this will tell the StorEd data warehouse to go out and pull data from this particular HUC. Let's move on to slide 41. Now, as you are querying data directly out of the warehouse, you can specify other types of parameters around the data, such as what type of station the data were collected at. For example, if you just wanted lake data from the StorEd warehouse, you would pick the type of station of lake, and then just receive that data. You can also specify that you want data that were collected during a certain time period. So, for example, if you just want all of the data that was collected in a certain watershed in 1998, then you would be able to do that using those different filterable query options. We want the data from the middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed, and we want dissolved oxygen data, so we're just going to choose that. Let's move on to slide 42. You can see here that we've moved down the query page, and now we're going to search for the dissolved oxygen characteristic. One tricky thing that a lot of people run into when they're interacting with the querying capabilities of the StorAt warehouse is that they don't always know exactly what the characteristic is called within the StorAt data warehouse. So, for example, a lot of folks might refer to dissolved oxygen as just DO. So when they're searching for characteristics, they might just type DO and then hit search. Unfortunately, if you don't specify to the warehouse that you might want an expanded version of that characteristic name, the StorAt warehouse might not return back to you exactly what you're looking for. So here, you're able to use a wildcard symbol, or in other words, the percent sign, in order to tell the warehouse that you'd like to see any characteristics that the warehouse has that might have the words dissolved oxygen in them. This is a lot like a search you might do out on Google or another search engine when you're looking for data or you're looking for information, but you don't know quite exactly the name of what you're looking for. So I'm going to go ahead and switch on to slide 43. You can see here that the StorAt data warehouse actually has three different characteristic names associated with dissolved oxygen. The top one there, dissolved oxygen, or DO, is what we're looking for, but you can also see that there's dissolved oxygen saturation as well as dissolved oxygen uptake. So if you were looking for something more specific within dissolved oxygen, you would be able to pick those as well and then search those from the data warehouse. We're going to go ahead and select the dissolved oxygen. At the top there, we would click that select button, and I'm going to move on to slide 44. So slide 44 shows that I've confirmed that I've been able to select dissolved oxygen DO. Now, in order to actually finish my query and then move into downloading the data, I would choose the button continue at the bottom of the screen. Let's move on to slide 45. So we're going to go ahead and download the data from the StorAt data warehouse. These slides are here just to kind of break up the screenshots, but we're going to go ahead and move on to slide 46, where we're going to go ahead and download the data. So now I'm on slide 46. Here you can see that we finished our query, and now the StorAt warehouse has returned to us a summary of the query that we've performed. So under that search criteria box, you can see that we've specified the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed under the HUC. Specifically under that number, you can see that we want all the different station types that have been collected within that watershed. You can see that we want activities from any time within that watershed. In other words, data collected at any time. And then you can see that we're looking for the dissolved oxygen characteristic. Now, from this page, you can always select a back option to modify the search parameters and refine the query that you're looking for. What happens with the StorAt database is that you enter in your email address and the data is returned to you through that email. The other thing that we request from you is a three-letter or three-number prefix that allows you to make sure that the data returned to you is indeed the data that you asked for. I'm now going to move to slide 47. Now that you're ready to download the data, it's important to understand that, again, StorAt is going to go into the warehouse, grab the data that you're requesting, and then return it back to you via email. If you're requesting a large amount of results data, for example, 500,000 results, the StorAt warehouse has to be able to process that request overnight. So in other words, the smaller the data that you're asking for, you can do an immediate processing job and have that data returned to you within the next 15 minutes. Otherwise, larger data requests happen overnight. Further down on that page, you can see that there's different data elements that you can pull out for the report. For example, you can choose to look at the station ID. You can look at the latitude-longitude information for that station. You can look at the depth that a certain measurement was taken at. Each of these data elements has is hyperlinked to definition pages so that if you are unsure of any of these data elements that you're pulling down, you can confirm what these data elements are by clicking on those hyperlinks. Let's move on to slide 48. Once you've gone ahead and told the system that you'd like to download data, we send you a confirmation screen that tells you that your request has been received and that the Storet Data Warehouse will begin processing that information. You can see here that the results download is going to be an immediate process and that you will receive this data right away. Let's move on to slide 49. This slide shows a screenshot of an email inbox where the data request that we had submitted has been sent back to the email. Now, when you request data from the Storet Warehouse, you actually receive two email responses from the Storet Warehouse. The first email response is letting you know that the data request that you submitted to the Storet Warehouse is being processed. The data at this point is not quite ready for you to download. A second email will come to your email inbox called completed. At that point, you will be able to download the data. Let's move to slide 50, where you can see this completed email. On slide 50, you can see the data request status is completed. That will always be the subject line, and you will be receiving these emails from the group Storet. So after you've sent in a data request to the data warehouse, go back to your email inbox and keep an eye out for one of these emails. The URL provided within the email, circled right there on slide 50, is what you will click in order to download the data. Once we've clicked this URL, the data will be downloaded to your computer. Let's go ahead and move to slide 51. Once you've clicked this URL, the data will be downloaded to your computer. The data is in a compressed format. This means that the data is put in a format that your computer has to decompress in order to look at and save. Different software is available to decompress data, such as WinZip. In this example, our computer is using WinZip to decompress the data and then open the file in order to save it to our computer. Other software is available that will allow you to decompress different kinds of files. In this example, WinZip is what we used. Let's move on to slide 51, where we will go ahead and save the data to our computer, and then we'll further analyze it later. So I'm moving on to slide 52, and you can see here that WinZip is allowing us to see the different data that we've pulled out of the Storet Data Warehouse. There's two data files that you can see within that WinZip window. The first one is a metadata file that gives you contextual information about the regular results that you've downloaded. The second file is the file we're going to target on. It's the regularresults.txt file. This file contains the dissolved oxygen data for the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed that we requested. We're going to take those files and we're going to save them to our desktop area of our computer. This will allow us to have them locally, where we will then be able to pull them into Excel. I'm going to go ahead and move on to slide 53, where we'll pause for any questions that people have about querying or downloading the Storet data.
Thank you, Duane and Kristen. As Kristen said, we will now break for some more questions. Remember that you can submit questions at any time online by clicking on that question mark button at the top of the slides page. And our first question comes from Shane in Roanoke, Virginia. Shane asks, are data available on groundwater sources, such as number or location of water supply wells?
This is Duane, and I'm gonna take this question. That's actually a great question, and there's two parts to the answer to that question. We actually do have groundwater data. However, water supply data typically is considered sensitive data at EPA, and so we typically do not share the locations for water supply data. And that data is actually contained in a separate EPA system called SIDWIS, or Safe Drinking Water Information System.
Okay, our next question comes from Lynn in Deming, Washington. Does the STORET database access the data stored in NWIS? If so, are there different procedures to access the NWIS data through STORET, and what are they?
The STORET database does not access the data in the NWIS system. The data in NWIS are a completely separate system. What I mentioned earlier is that we are considering both us and USGS are developing procedures to take data out of our separate systems and put them into a common format so that anybody would be able to access our separate systems and pull the data together in a common portal and show the data as if it did come from one common system. So that's something that we're working on that hopefully we'll be able to have ready within the next year.
And we have another question coming from Kelly in California, and it's a little bit longer. So this presentation has been entirely focused on obtaining data for a specific watershed. What about obtaining nationwide data for a particular pollutant? For example, how could I obtain nationwide monitoring data for parathyroid insecticides in water and sediment? P.S. FYI, getting local watershed data is easy for anyone working in an agency in that watershed. What's hard is getting nationwide data, which allows one to compare local data to other locations and to determine if a problem is only local or perhaps national in scope.
That's a really good question. Getting data at the national level is easy in SORET. It's just a matter of how you define the locational information that you're looking at. If you go into STORET and you don't specify a particular location, what you're basically saying is that you're looking for all of the data that's available within STORET, and then you could then specify the particular parameter that you're interested in. Really, the bigger question is not really getting the data, but then once you have the data, what can you do with the data? Getting national data sets out of STORET, there's a number of things that you need to consider. Number one, are the data comparable? Can you compare the data that are being collected by the different organizations? And that's where we get into the importance of documented quality. The important thing that you'd want to take a look at if you did download data that was from a number of different organizations is, number one, what methods did they use to collect that data? And number two, what methods did they use to analyze that data? And are those methods comparable? If you do determine that both of those things are correct and you feel that the folks collecting the data do have acceptable data quality objectives that match your data quality objectives, then you could do that type of a national query. But it really depends on the type of question that you're wanting to ask. But the simple question of can you get the data is pretty simple. The hard question is what do you do with the data once you have it?
Okay, and at this time we're going to open up the phone lines. So if anyone would like to ask a question over the phone, please unmute yourself and give us your name and organization before your question.
Dan in EPA Region 3.
Dan?
Yes, in the first or second slide, you had the USGS URL up there on their system. Can you please tell us that again? I think it was on the second slide or third slide.
Yes, it is http://waterdata.usgs.gov/NWIS.
Can you repeat that again?
Sure. http://waterdata, all one word, .usgs.gov/NWIS.
What was that, more slash? endless more slash?
Forward slash, I'm sorry.
Oh, forward slash. And can you repeat that? Forward slash what?
This webcast is available online, and so you would be able to get it from there as well. Otherwise, you also can always go to
NWIS. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Yes, this is Kathy from Florida. We would like to know if there's a specific number in mind, whether you do an immediate download or overnight download.
That's a great question. The number, the magic number is 300,000. So if you have more than 300,000, but less than 600,000, you do an overnight. If you have less than 300,000, then you can do it.
Thank you.
And if it's over 600,000, you actually can't download it.
Are there any other questions?
This is David Rockwell from the Great Lakes National Program Office. We at one time stored all of our lake data in Storet, and we've got text files here, you know, copies of it. But I was wondering, is there a more useful way of getting the data, perhaps in some sort of Excel-type spreadsheets?
What we want to do with the Great Lakes program is actually to get that data in a different
format. It's breaking up.
That would allow us to share the data directly through Storet.
I'm talking about historical data back from 83 through the present.
You can do it even with that data, as long as it's documented.
I'm asking about how do we get it out of the system.
Out of Storet?
Yes, it's in there already.
Oh, it must be in the legacy system, correct?
Yes.
Okay. We may need to talk about that further later. What I'd recommend is that you get in touch with us and we can try to figure out the best way to get that out.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions on the phone?
Okay, if there are no further questions on the phone, if I could please get everyone to advance to slide 54. If you did unmute yourself, I ask that you please remute yourself at this time. Before we get into the third and final section of today's presentation, I'd like to take a moment to let you know about our July 18th webcast on acid mine drainage and art featuring Alan Kump of the Appalachian Coal Country Watershed Team. Please visit the Watershed Academy webcast webpage at www.epa.gov/watershedwebcasts, and that's all one word, for more information on upcoming webcasts. Okay, back to Kristen.
Thanks, Megan. We're going to go ahead and go to slide 55. And now we've moved to a point where we've been able to download the data from the Storet data warehouse. Now, the whole point of all of this is to be able to take the data that we've downloaded and use it to help us characterize our watershed. So for the rest of this presentation, at least the bulk of it, I'm going to be explaining how to go ahead and bring the data that you've downloaded into Excel or another simple spreadsheet-type software that will also allow you to take the data that you've downloaded and analyze it. Some features of Excel you may have already seen, or some may be new to you, but hopefully this will help you as you work with your data even now. One other thing that I'll mention is that there are a lot of steps to make data manageable, but as long as you can get through them, you can turn that data into information, and as long as that happens, you can go ahead and analyze the data. I'm going to go ahead and move to slide 56. So we have the Storet data downloaded to our local computer. Now I'm going to open up Microsoft Excel. On slide 56, you can see a blank worksheet within Excel. I'm going to go ahead and move to slide 57. On slide 57, you can see that we're beginning to bring in the Storet data from the place where we saved it to our computer. In order to bring in the storette data into the Excel spreadsheet, we're going to choose the data option from the menu bar at the top of the screen. Once we've selected data, you can see that we've moved down to the choice Import External Data. From there, we're going to choose the choice Import Data. This will allow us to take the data that we've downloaded from the storeout warehouse and place it into this Excel spreadsheet. I'm going to move on to slide 58. Here you can see that we're going to tell Excel where to look for the data that we've gotten from the storeout warehouse. What we have circled here is the location of the data. Basically, we want to make sure Excel is looking in our desktop area for the data. The second circle down there, you can see the actual file name. So we're going to tell Excel to bring in this specific regular results text file. Towards the bottom there, you can see that the files of type is selected to all data sources. This means that Excel will look for any kind of file type when searching for which data you would like to bring in to the program. Finally, we're going to click Open and move to slide 59. This is a screenshot of Excel's text import wizard. Because data delivered from the storeout warehouse is in a text file, the different columns and data elements of data are all put into one place, and they're delimited by a certain character. This means that things like the organization that collected the data, the different stations' names, station IDs, those are all separated within the text file by a character. And that character, again, is the tilde character. When working through the text import wizard, you are telling Excel how to look at the data that you're importing and how to place it into an Excel spreadsheet. I'm going to go ahead and click Next and move to slide 60. On the text import wizard, you can see step 2 here is to tell Excel which kind of delimiter the text file has. Again, this is a tilde delimiter. If you've never used the tilde character, it is located towards the top of your keyboard, right to the left of the number 1. So here on the text import wizard, we've chosen the other checkbox, and we've put in the tilde character specifying that this is the delimiter of our data. Underneath the data preview section of the import wizard, you can see that now all of our data has been lined up into straight columns. You can see the organization name, Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, is separate now from the station IDs. We're going to go ahead and click Next and move on to slide 61. Step 3 of the text import wizard, you can see, asks you to go ahead and specify the data format for each of the columns. For these purposes, we're going to go ahead and leave all of the data columns in the general data format and click Finish. Once we've clicked Finish, all the data will have been brought in to the Excel spreadsheet. I'm going to go ahead and go to slide 62. So you can see all the data have been brought in to our Excel spreadsheet. You can see all the data are in nice, neat columns. Column A has the different organizations that have collected data. In this screen, we can only see that there's a bunch of data from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. You can look across and see in columns E and F the actual hook that we pulled the data from, so that 8-digit number that you had been seeing before. What we're going to do next is we're going to go ahead and sort this data so that we can easily manage and work with it. In order to do that, I've went ahead and selected all of the data elements, all of the cells, and I'm going to go back up to the data option within the menu, and I'm going to click Sort. I'm going to move on to slide 63. Once you've chosen to sort your data, you're going to make sure that it's sorted the way you would like it. So this just tells you the different ways that Excel allows you to sort data. You can sort it in an ascending fashion or a descending fashion by certain column names. I'm going to move on to slide 64. You can see here that we're going to choose to sort this data first by station ID. Then we're going to sort by the activity start date. What this means is that all the data collected on a particular station will be grouped together, and within that group, the data will be ordered by when the sampling occurred. So this will help us look exactly at the dissolved oxygen results at a certain place at a certain time. Once we click OK, we'll go ahead and see that this data has been sorted. I'm going to move on to slide 65, which just summarizes what we've done so far, and now we're going to go ahead and look at an individual station. Let's move on to slide 65. Now, Randy had said before that we were going to look at a certain station within this HUC, and it'll be for the dissolved oxygen data. What we're going to do now that our data is sorted is we're going to filter on the certain station that we're looking for. So in order to filter this data, again, we will have all of the cells selected, and we will choose the data option again at the top of the window, go to the filter section, and choose auto filter. What auto filter will help you do is choose the exact data that you want to see. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to slide 67. So now that we've turned on the auto filter, what it allows us to do is see a drop-down box for the station IDs and allow us to go ahead and directly pick station 156. Once we've done that, we'll be able to filter out all the other data on this spreadsheet and just see inside our window the dissolved oxygen data values from station 156 within this HUC. This is a great way to dissect your data and break it up into manageable chunks so that then you can analyze it and perhaps see some trends. Let's go ahead and move on to slide 68. So now, we want to take the different dissolved oxygen values and look at them at a higher level, probably in relation to each other. So what we're going to do is we're going to make a simple chart using the tools that Excel provides in order to see how the DO results have changed at that station over time. So in order to make that chart, we're going to select all the result values by highlighting all of the result values for that station. Because your station has been filtered, the only thing on your screen that you will see is data from that station. After we've highlighted all of the result values, we'll go into the Insert option from the menu bar, and we'll go down and choose the Chart option. I'm going to go ahead and go to slide 68. It's slide 69. We're now on slide 69, and Excel has brought up the Chart Wizard. This is yet another tool that Excel provides that allows you to tell Excel how you want it to work with your data. So here you can see you can make multiple chart types. Because we're looking at dissolved oxygen and how it's changed at this particular station over time, we'll probably want to select a type of chart that will allow us to see trends. One example of a chart that will help us with this is the line chart type. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to slide 70, where we'll go ahead and select line as the chart type. You can see here we've selected line on slide 70. Under the chart subtype, we're going to select the type of line chart that shows the actual individual data points as they change across the graph. You're welcome to choose any of these chart subtypes with data that you're working with in Excel, but for this example, we're going to choose this one. Let's go ahead and select Next and move on to slide 71. Here the chart wizard is continuing to walk through with you how you want your data to look. In order to continue specifying what you want this chart to look like, you'll want to go ahead and make sure you click on the Series tab in order to specify for Excel what exactly you want on your chart. So let's make sure we have the Series tab clicked, and we'll move on to slide 72. So we're moving through the chart wizard, and now what we're going to do is tell the chart wizard what we want the chart to look like. You can see here that we've got the dissolved oxygen values changing over time based on the y-axis being the different result values for dissolved oxygen. Since we want to look at how dissolved oxygen has changed over time, we'll want to specify a time-type increment along the x-axis of our chart. In order to do that, we will click the small spreadsheet type button at the right side of the chart wizard near the area called Category X Axis Labels. Once we've done that, we'll move on to slide 73. This takes us back out to the actual spreadsheet with our data. Because we want to look at dissolved oxygen over time, we're going to select the activity start dates as what will be represented along the x-axis of our charts. Once we've selected all of the activity start cells from our Excel spreadsheet, we will go ahead and return to the chart wizard by clicking on the small button to the right in that small window. I'm going to go ahead and move on to slide 74. You can see now that on the bottom part of the chart, the x-axis, we now have all the different dates. They're at year increments, so you can see, if you look close enough, that data has started being collected in March of 1994 through March of 2006. You can see how the dissolved oxygen has changed. So once I hit next, we'll do one last step within the chart wizard to specify how exactly we want the chart to look, and then we will be finished. Let's go ahead and move on to slide 75. On slide 75, you can see that we have the different labels now for the different pieces of our chart. We'll want to make sure it has a title and descriptions for both the X and Y axes. You can see that on the Y axis, we're specifying that dissolved oxygen has been measured in the unit milligrams per liter. Let's go ahead and hit next, where we can finish out specifying how the chart will look and move back into Excel. Let's move on to slide 76. Finally, we see the finish button. You can see it here, and once we click it, the chart will be brought into our Excel spreadsheet. Let's move on to 77. Here you can see that we now have a completed chart to look at how dissolved oxygen has changed over time on station 156 within this watershed. Seems like a lot of steps to get here, but when you're doing it live, it probably is a lot faster, and the benefit here is that you can see how the data is changing. Let's go ahead and move on to slide 78. Here's a close-up of the chart that we've made. Again, the dates are along the bottom, and they're in yearly increments. From here, we can see that it looks as though the DO fluctuation might have some correlation to seasonal variation. Let's move on to slide 79. So what can we say about the graph that we've just created? Again, it appears that DO is seasonal in terms of the levels, and it looks like there is some type of event, maybe in 1998, that caused a spike in the dissolved oxygen. Feel free to toggle back to the chart on slide 78 just to look again. Continuing with slide 79, the other bullets, maybe for context, we'd like to look at the other types of data that are available at this one particular station. In order to see again the types of data that are available at this station, we'll want to go back to the watershed summary tool. I'll go ahead and move on to slide 80. Again, here we return to the watershed summary tool. You can see here that we've again selected the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed. However, this time we're going to search and see what kinds of results are available from the Storet warehouse by which organizations have collected those results. I'm going to go ahead and move on to slide 81. Here you can see the different organizations that have collected data across this watershed. The first organization listed there is the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. This is the organization that we were targeting when we were looking at station 156. From this page, we're going to go ahead and select the 66 stations that are listed to see which stations those are and what kinds of information are available at those stations. Let's move on to slide 82. After we've selected the 66 stations hyperlink, this page comes up. You can see again that we're within the Middle South Platte Cherry Creek watershed and that the Colorado Department of Public Health has all of these different stations that they've collected data at. The fourth station down you can see is station 156. This station is located at the South Platte River right in downtown Denver at 19th Street. You can see here the period of record for when data was recorded. Just like our chart had, we have data from 1994 through 2006. Let's go ahead and move on to slide 83. You can also see here that the different types of data collected at this station are again listed. What we're going to do is we're going to click on the hyperlink of the station to see what exact parameters were collected at 156 so that we can look at dissolved oxygen, perhaps in comparison to another type of parameter. Let's go ahead and move on to slide 84. Here's station 156 and all the different kinds of things that have been collected at 156. You can see we have iron type data, we even have dissolved solids, total suspended solids, all of these items, and then of course dissolved oxygen. You can also see that there is temperature data available, as well as pH data available. What you could do from here is download this data as well from the storage warehouse, and then move through the types of steps that we've outlined here in Excel in order to analyze this data, perhaps in comparison to the dissolved oxygen data. Let's go ahead and move on to slide 85. Now we're on slide 85. So we pulled together some site-specific water quality monitoring data from the Storet warehouse. Again, if you wanted to, you could pull down additional information on this same site or at other sites within this watershed to help you continue to characterize what you're looking at. I'm now going to go ahead and switch gears a little bit. Let's move on to slide 86. We've kind of come to the end of where we're talking about getting data out of the Storet warehouse. This slide really speaks to how we're hoping to improve ways for smaller organizations to get data into the Storet warehouse. Randy and Duane spoke to the benefits of managing your data locally and then sharing that data at a national level. Currently, the Storet team is in the process of developing an easy-to-use web tool for smaller organizations that will allow you to submit data directly to the Storet warehouse. This tool will be available next year for all kinds of data, both physical and chemical, as well as for biological data. Let's go ahead and move on to slide 87. In order to use this tool, you would only need a few things. The first thing is an internet connection. Most folks have this. The second thing is that you would need to be having your data organized in a fashion that we have described before. Much like Duane had described, kind of the journalistic approach to describing data, the where, why, how, when, and what was collected, your data would need to be organized in those categories. Again, we use the Storet terms, projects, stations, and results to describe that data. Let's go ahead and move on to slide 88. So finally here, this is our last slide. We'd like to extend an invitation to you, those who might be using this type of tool to get data into the Storet warehouse. As we develop this tool, we're always welcome to hear feedback from the different users that might be using it as to how it works. We would extend this invitation for future webcasts where you could perhaps share your thoughts. A future webcast wouldn't necessarily be a part of the Watershed Academy type webcast, but would be more targeted to looking at whether this tool would be right for you. Let's go ahead and move on to slide 89. Here, we'd like to hear any more questions you have, and I'll return it back to Megan.
Thank you, Kristen. We do have a few minutes to answer additional questions. However, if you could first please move with me to slide 90, that would be great. Again, let me draw your attention to where you can obtain the speaker's contact information. If you're online, simply click on the Home button at the top of your screen. You'll be returned to the seminar's homepage, which has today's speakers' email addresses and phone numbers. On the left-hand sidebar is the Links button, which has additional resources identified by today's speakers. Also on the left-hand sidebar is the Feedback button. Please take a quick minute or so to submit the online feedback form, as we really do consider your comments in our quest to improve our webcast. Now we have some additional time for questions. Let's begin with those submitted online. The first question comes from Vicki from Missoula, Montana, and she asks, the list of parameters includes metals, nutrients, and pesticides, but what about industrial chemicals, pharmaceuticals, sediments, and other pollutants of concern?
That's a good question, Vicki. When we began doing the groupings of our different parameters, we want to try to keep it simple. But you are right that there are a number of different parameters that we also could have organized them into as well. However, at this point, our plan is probably to keep them the same way that they are. But if some of these others do become of concern or of issue that folks would really like us to, we certainly could look into grouping them differently. However, it's just a matter of time that it would take and making sure that there's not a tremendous amount of overlap or confusion in terms of which group a certain parameter should go into.
Our next question was submitted by Barbara from Fort Collins, Colorado. And Barbara would like to know, do you think in the future we will be able to select storet data from a web map tool?
That's a good question. We are actually currently working on that. Our EnviroMapper tool is undergoing a redo. Our EnviroMapper for water. When that is done, some of the new features that it will allow you to do is select a number of stations, and then you'll be able to see the summary information for those stations and hopefully be able to actually download the data as well.
And Jane from Santa Fe, New Mexico asks, can you select multiple characters and or stations? She would also like to know, can you search for data for a particular water body type, i.e. rivers, streams, and lakes?
The short answer to that question is yes. Simply depending on how you enter the information on the search screen, you can do a certain search for certain stations. You also, as you look for results, can specify what we call the station type, and that's where you get to the idea of being able to select just stations that are on rivers or stations that are on lakes, etc. So, yes, you can do that sort of query.
And Alex from D.C. would like to know, do tribes submit data to storet? How?
All of our tribes we're currently working with right now trying to set up the capability for them to be able to submit data. We recently released something that we call our National Web Sim, and really just in short what that is that it allows for our tribes to use a template, which is basically just an Excel spreadsheet, to enter their data into this template, and then what they can do is submit that data over the web directly into our storet database, where it will then be migrated into our warehouse, and people can download the data out of the warehouse. So we have just recently, and this is just in the past few months, set up this capability for tribes to do this over the Internet. Prior to that, tribes had been either collaborating together to set up a similar type of web interface, or using our direct storet database to enter data.
Our next question comes from Vicki, again from Montana. And Vicki would like to know, an 8-digit HUC is a huge area with hundreds of stations. How can you specify just a single creek or site and get its data?
Okay, that's a good question. 8-digit HUCs are very large. First of all, I'm going to say something that actually doesn't answer your question, but I think is an important point. One of the things that we're starting to look at as well is using the 12-digit HUCs, which are a much smaller watersheds, and those are being developed by the USGS, and they are, once those are done and complete for the entire country, we will use those and make those as part of our queries as well, so you'll be able to get a summary for a 12-digit HUC. But to answer your question in short, to find data for a given station or for a given stream, a couple ways you could do that. Number one you could go in through the mapping tools and find the stations that are related to that stream and then specify those stations particularly for the data that you want to download. Or if you can do a search for that stream name and try to find that station ID that corresponds with that name and enter that station in the station download. So there's a couple ways to get to that.
And William from Roswell, Georgia would like to know, in addition to the individual data results, are there any statistical data available from Storet, mean, min, max, for example, or was the intention to collect the basic results and all statistics be done by the person querying the data?
The first part of my answer is that truly the intent of Storet is to store the raw data, not necessarily the derived statistical data. However, Storet is pretty flexible, and we do have a number of users that do input the actual mean, min, max, et cetera. We do allow that type of data. However, though, our true intent is really to try to get the raw data, and then that's up to the user to be able to do any sorts of analyses that they want, particularly the means, max, averages, et cetera. Those sorts of things are easily done in Excel and can be done quite easily after you download the data.
And we have one more question that was submitted online that we'll take, and it's Michael from Stillwater, Oklahoma. And Michael would like to know, who is allowed to put data into Storet?
That's an easy one with a short answer. Pretty much anybody. Anybody who would like to put data in Storet and is able to provide the data in the format that we're looking for and also has documented their data sufficiently is available to put data into Storet.
And at this time, we'll open up the phone lines. And just as a reminder, if you do have a question, please unmute yourself, give us your name, your organization, and where you're from before giving us your question.
Are there any questions?
Hello.
Go ahead.
This is Joe in Georgia at Fort Benning. I heard no mention of cost. Am I correct in assuming there is no cost?
You are correct. Storet is free.
All right. Thanks a lot.
This is Steve from Oklahoma. Could you talk a little bit about the future of Storet, particularly the new WQX endeavor?
Yeah, and I don't know if this is the best area, but since we have time to talk about that, I will talk about that briefly. WQX, which stands for the Water Quality Exchange, is our replacement for what used to be what we call our distributed Storet, which was a database that we handed out to different folks that wanted to track their data, and then they would submit us a copy of that. WQX is replacing that component, with that component being phased out in September of 2009. So that's our future. Our future is going in this WQX direction, and we haven't really talked about that much on this webcast, but I'm sure we will be talking about that much, much more, and we continue to talk about that quite a bit in our user community. If folks want more information about WQX particularly, if you go to our website, www.epa.gov/storet, there is a link directly off of that website called WQX. And on that side, it does talk about the future of Storet, the direction we're going, and our schedule for getting there.
Any other questions?
This is Barb Gauthier in Fort Collins. Can you hear me? Because I wasn't sure if I unmuted or not.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. I wanted to ask a question about if you're collecting a certain amount of parameters and you want to have them in a cross-tab format, is there a way to pull that data out for a certain date and location, all the parameters that are involved with that date and location in a cross-tab, you know, column format? Instead of just one column with everything in it?
There are ways to do that. We currently don't do that on our website, although I was just meeting with a group of our users this week, and they were requesting that same sort of functionality. That may be something that we start to look at. It gets a little complicated simply because if you get too many parameters in a single download, you can easily outstrip what you can put in an Excel file. And also there's a number of fields that really make up what you would want to put into that one column. However, having said that, it definitely can be done. An easy way for you to do that now, that actually can be done in Microsoft Access. Very simply, all you have to really do is put the file into Access and you do a cross-tab query on the data, and it's quite an easy thing to do. But hopefully that answers your question, but that is something that we have had a number of folks ask us about, and there's some complexity to doing that, and that's something that we're beginning to think about and trying to figure out if that's something that we can do.
What is, I use Access, and what is the easiest way to do that in Access? I mean, do you just, do it by parameter? Right. A cross-tab by parameter?
Yes, you do a cross-tab by parameter. The other fields that you need to consider in addition to just parameter are the analytical method, another field called sample fraction, and then the fourth field that's important for you to consider is the unit, because that's where things could be different. So you need to think about those.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, I had a question about the South in Kentucky about the upcoming functionality of being able to actually submit a file to SORET. Is your intended audience or your intended are like watershed volunteer groups part of your intended capture group there?
Absolutely.
And so would that data then be flagged or otherwise noted that it came from, say, a volunteer group or a seventh grade class or something like that? I mean, I certainly understand the need to be able to have the metadata that confirms the quality of the data and the way that it was collected and the training that the people that collected it had and those sorts of things, but simply making it available and having a common place to have it, is that the intention?
Yes, and they would, each organization would have what we call an organization ID, their own grouping where all of their data is collected, so that it would be obvious that it came from a volunteer.
Would that also include, or would it also involve, what am I trying to say here? I guess my question is do you have like a template or a even just a beta version of what you think that the entry form might look like, and is it going to be consistent with the Compass format? I guess I'm wondering, you know, I work with a volunteer watershed organization. We have 7 years of data, and if we knew that this was coming, we could start going ahead and going through our archival data and preparing it to upload if we knew what the format was going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple things with that question. Number one, I'm not as familiar with the Compass format, so I can't really answer that, but we have created a template that we currently use for the tribes that we are considering that probably be a great template to be able to use for the volunteers.
Okay.
So that's something we'll be looking at, and if we do decide that's something that would work out, we'll go ahead and post that up. And it's really just a very simple thing. It's just an Excel spreadsheet. That's all it is.
Yeah, but even just knowing what the, you know, what the width of the fields is and the format of the fields, whether they're numeric or text, and the order of them and those sorts of things, we could go ahead and start taking our archival data and using that, so that'd be great.
Right, and actually, if you already have that data in a data system, your better option may be to look at the Water Quality Exchange to transmit data from your system directly to our system. And you would definitely want to check out that website that I mentioned earlier. That would be a better option for you.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Okay, if there are no more questions over the fence, I just wanted to let everyone know, if you did submit a question online, we had a huge number of responses and questions online, and we couldn't answer all of them during this webcast, but we will try to get back to each and every one of you that sent in a question after today's webcast. This does conclude today's Watershed Academy webcast. On behalf of the entire EPA Watershed Academy webcast team, I'd like to thank Randy Hill, Wayne Young, and Kristen Gunther for presenting today. And, of course, thanks to every one of you who participated and joined us. This is Megan Classic from EPA's Office of Wetlands, Oceans, and Watersheds signing off. Have a great day.